Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Okay, let's get into this ominous warning sign that we have not seen in 50 years. Over to CNBC, and the signal I'm referring to is the stock market, in fact. Worst first half of the year in 50 years. And I like the rest of this headline. Has all come down to one thing. Now notice the first key point. A multitude of factors conspired to generate the stock market's worst first half. Oh, I don't want to beat up on Jeff Cox here too bad. I think what happened is he writes the story and the key points, and then maybe the editor writes the headline. So the right hand isn't talking to the left. I just thought I'd point that out. Just, you know, anytime I can give the mainstream media, especially CNBC, a hard time, I take advantage of that opportunity. So it all comes down to one thing, and that one thing is a multitude of factors. All right. Anyway, these multitude of factors, or one thing you choose, has resulted in the worst first half since 1970. Okay, there we go. All centering on inflation. So maybe that's the one thing they were referring to. Besides the damage to the big stock market averages, there has been carnage everywhere. Not necessarily the housing market. Some hope lies ahead when the S&P 500 plunges 21% in the first half of 1970. It promptly reversed those losses to gain 26.5% second half of the year. All right. So maybe there's some good news there if you're long the market. I don't know if that really means anything. I don't think that's anything predictive. If I had to guess, I would say that short term, market's probably oversold. That would make sense to me. But over the next quarter or two, I would not be surprised if the market continues lower, especially if we head into recession. Although we'll get to a point there in the recession where all the data is horrible, the news is bad, and that actually is baked into the market. And pretty much everyone that has sold, or pretty much everyone that will sell, has already sold. And although the skies may look gray, the financial skies and the economic skies, that could present us with a buying opportunity. You know, someone on a live stream the other day asked me if I thought anything was cheap. And I said, obviously I like the commodities long term, so I'm waiting for pullbacks there. But silver looked interesting. Gold miner looked interesting. And not that I'm buying now, but the cruise lines went back onto the old watch list. Why? And I bought, I think, Carnival Cruise Lines. I don't know what it was, at $7 or $8, something like that. I think I sold it at like, I don't know, 18, 20, maybe 17, something in the high teens or low 20s. And the reason I sold it, not because it was expensive, but I just didn't like what they were doing with all the mandate deals, and almost out of principle, I sold. But now most people are pricing it, or most analysts on Wall Street are pricing those cruise lines as though they're going to go bust because they took on so much debt to survive the cerveza sickness, and they needed to have consistent cash flow coming in. So if that cash flow takes a dip because of a recession, then the theory is they might not be able to survive. Now, I think that in that recession, the government, the Fed, will probably bail them out, just because I think we're going to get more bailouts, not fewer bailouts, during the next down cycle. But again, I'm not buying. I want to be very clear. But I thought that was interesting that Carnival, I think it was Carnival, the price is actually lower, or as low as it was during the depths of the cerveza sickness. First topic I have highlighted. So worse, Federal Reserve officials armed with full year forecasts of transitory inflation that now seem almost comically inaccurate. Couple thoughts here. Number one, I remind everyone that the rebel capitalists never saw this as transitory. The rebel capitalists always saw this as, well, it all depends on government spending. It depends on the supply chains. Most likely we're going into a decade of inflation, or higher prices, I should say, that is mixed with some peaks and valleys. Nothing goes up in a straight line, but we kind of saw that one coming. And I agree, it is comically inaccurate. But if the Fed was comically inaccurate there, they've pretty much never been able to predict a big crisis situation or a financial crisis. And remember that QT was supposed to be like watching paint dry. Pretty much every prediction or forecast they have is untrue. So why are we still listening to them? And I'm not talking about why are we doing videos, because the market really puts an emphasis on every single word they say. But pretty much that's my point. Why are the talking heads, and why is the market so emphatic on dissecting every single word the Fed says or Jerome Powell says at a press interview, when they are completely wrong 95% of the time? So here is the S&P's rough first half. Now, they say that this kind of started at the beginning of the year. Not really. This actually started in November of 2021. I remember it well. It's when the Fed came out and first announced that they were going to start a rate hiking cycle and they're going to start quantitative tightening. Just as a reminder, guys, this is the first month that they're doing QT. Now, according to my buddy Joseph Wang, he used to work at the Fed, who did quantitative tightening and quantitative easing. Usually that just happens at the middle of the month and the end of the month. And it isn't necessarily that the Fed is selling assets back into the market. They're just not rolling over the current assets they have, meaning current bonds, I should say. So as those treasuries mature, they're just go ahead and taking payment. They're not rolling over the debt. So any more issuance by Janet Yellen has to be absorbed by the marketplace.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level.
So after falling behind the inflation curve, the Fed has now been forced to play catch up in the form of interest rate hikes worth 1.5 percentage points with more to come. Here's what I wanted to say on this. More to come. Okay, maybe not. I don't know. We shall see. I mean, if we get a negative GDP print for Q2, if the market continues to trend down, and although that's what the Fed wants, the market trending down, but if the market crashes down, that's a different story. Is the Fed going to raise? I don't know. And one chart that I've been using in my presentations over the last 8 weeks at all of these different conferences, including my own, Rebel Capitalist Live, is this chart of Fed funds, which is right here. And we can see every rate hiking cycle, they don't get to the last peak. So what I mean by this is in 81, they got up to almost 18%. Well, they did up to looks like 19%. And then in 90, or just prior to that recession, they got up to 9. In 2000, they got up to 7, roughly. 2007, they got up to 5. 2019, they got up to 2.25. I guess that was the range between 2.25. I didn't think they got up to 2.41. I thought there were the range was 2 to 2.25. Maybe it was 2.25 to 2.5 was the range. But regardless, my point is this is a down trending line. They never, in each rate hiking cycle, they can never get back up to the previous peak. So if their previous peak was 2.25%, they're currently at 1.5. It would not surprise me if the Fed has to reverse course once they get up to, let's say, 2%. In fact, I could see it a very high probability of the Fed raising by 50 basis points the next time they meet and then having to quickly reverse course. Okay, going back to the article, the NASDAQ, which has a stronger tech focus, has suffered losses approaching 30%. Bitcoin tumbled 60%. Copper, often considered an economic bellwether, has fallen 15%. Cotton, 13%. So for me, this is all great news. This is fantastic news, especially with copper and cotton, because with the backdrop of that long-term commodity super cycle, I love it when these prices fall. And these prices will, if we go into a recession, these prices will most likely fall even further. And I cannot wait. So I'm just, with my portfolio, as you guys know, I've got a higher percentage of cash than I normally do. And it's not optimal because you've got a negative carry. But what's interesting is you've only got a negative carry if your expenses are denominated in dollars. So if your expenses are denominated in dollars, you're losing purchasing power with that cash. But if that cash is dollars and your expenses are Colombian pesos, let's say, and the dollar is increasing substantially in value relative to the peso or at a higher rate than the local inflation, then you actually don't have a negative carry on that cash position. And this is kind of an interesting geo arbitrage that I don't hear a lot of people talking about. So for me, having that larger cash position doesn't really impact my purchasing power unless my expenses go back to being dollars sometime. And then the food prices or the rent prices or whatever I was paying for in the United States, I would be able to buy less of that stuff, fewer of those goods and services. But my main point here is the reason I've got that large cash position is because I cannot wait for these commodities to come down even further. Special purpose acquisition companies, in other words, SPACs. And you guys, I'm sure, remember me doing videos on SPACs probably a year ago, maybe a little longer, where I was calling out Chamath, whatever his name is. And I don't usually call out people by name. I did so because he was very unprofessional, let's say, to Peter Schiff. And I just don't take kindly to that. So if he's going to be rude to Peter, then I'm at least going to be, I'm going to call him out on his BS in a way that I thought was professional. So I called him out on one of my whiteboard videos. But this is when every single thing that, you know, SPAC. He bought Open Door. I can't remember all the companies he bought through a SPAC, but I just saw this as just kind of a sales approach. It wasn't that he was investing in something he thought was going to be viable long term. It's just he was investing in things that people that he thought would be able to generate a lot of AUM, which is assets under management. And then regardless of whether it goes up or down, he's still getting his fees. So it's like having a call option on whatever it is you're investing in. But instead of paying for that call option, you're getting paid. And I just, that didn't sit well with me. And it was obvious back then that at some point SPACs would have a rough time of it because it was just followed that classic kind of bubble trajectory. And we're seeing that bubble to a certain degree deflate, the post SPAC index, which follows the vehicles from their initial listings through either a merger target or live deal, is having its worst month since being introduced in November 2020, down nearly 25% in this month, not down 25% total, down 25% in this month. Is that, now that I'm saying that out loud, that seems, the page isn't there. They probably got a call from Chamath and he's like, hey, take that down quick. It's making me look terrible. But that's from the way this reads, it reads as though it's down 25% this month. That is staggering, if that's correct. So then it goes on to say, what will stop the bleeding? For the market, the old expression is that market gets the news first. All the market is waiting for is the Fed's rhetoric to soften. Yeah. I mean, I think going back to what I was saying earlier, this is kind of CNBC reiterating this, or at least this quote from Crosby. I'm not sure who that is, but he's saying that would move the market toward expecting perhaps a pause or maybe even a 50 basis point hike or 25 basis points, depending on where we are. And that would be consistent with that chart of Fed funds going back to 81, where they can never get back up to that last high watermark. And yeah, I mean, I think that would drive markets higher if they're expecting 50, 75, and they get a pause at 150 or even 175. I think you're going to see the market go up. I don't know if that's sustainable, but I definitely think it would give it kind of a shot in the arm, a sugar rush temporarily. About the only things that have worked this year have been certain areas of commodity markets, such oil, gas, ag products. Those gains have been offset by huge losses and everything, banks, automakers, building products. Right. So again, I want to point out that as Rebel Capitalists, we've been talking about this since March of 2020. And I need to give a huge hat tip to my partners in Rebel Capitalist Pro, Lynn Alden, Chris McIntosh. They have been talking about commodities, I mean, going way back, but they're really pounding the table on commodities during the Cerveza sickness. And as we can see, that has been the best or one of the best performing sectors. So if you haven't checked out Rebel Capitalist Pro, definitely do so at georgegammon.com/pro. So here, this Crosby gentleman or person goes on to say, you trade and invest in the markets you have, not the ones you want. Wrong. I could not disagree more. I was listening to my buddy Macro Alf the other day, and he had a saying that he learned from his mentor, which is very consistent with what we hear from Jim Rogers. And this goes back to that interview he did. I believe it was with the interview he did with Jack Schwager in the first Market Wizards books, where he says that one of the biggest mistakes people make is they're always having to do something. He says, usually you just sit in your chair and do nothing. And you guys know what he said. You just wait till a big pile of money shows up in the corner. You go over, pick it up, go back to your chair and continue to do absolutely nothing. And what Macro Alf said is his mentor told him, there's a time to be bullish, there's a time to be bearish, and there's a time to go fishing. Kind of the same idea, the same concept. And I find myself kind of getting enticed, or kind of I find myself wanting to, you know, do something to trade. Oh, well, that looks good. It might not be cheap yet, but it's probably going to be cheap. I find myself always being tempted by that inner dialogue, but then I've got to step back and say, no. It's you just sit in the chair. There's not a pile of money sitting in the corner as of yet. So I would, unless you're a trader, if you're a trader, something different, but I don't think that you always have to trade the market you're given. No, if there's not a big pile of money sitting in the corner, then it's time to go fishing. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you on the next.